Good evening, Bill.
Good evening, Stanley. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of the BS Car Guys Podcast. We are delighted to have you with us this evening or morning or afternoon or whatever time of day it is that you find pleasing to listen to us talk about cars.
Siesta. See, you got it right. 100% right, because you always get it right.
First time in 2023.
It always comes out right, regardless of what you think.
Did you say regardless or irregardless?
Irregardless.
That's not a word.
I said, no, did I say regardless? I think I said regardless. We have okay. The tape.
We're not doing a live, like, on-air replay. We're not professional sports. Hey, speaking of professional sports, I found out that this week is a large football game.
You're being corny.
No. Like, somebody asked us if we were going to a party for that event, and I said, I don't have any plans to. Is it coming up sometime soon? And they're like, yeah, this Sunday. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're not doing that.
Well, the event you're talking about, I know you know, it's the Super Bowl, and just like that person.
I think we have to have permission from the NFL to say the words.
Well, they can come at you.
I didn't say them. You did. They'll come get you.
Well, they have an event, and if that person knew you, they know that you wasn't going.
Yeah, they definitely knew I wasn't going. That's true.
They knew you weren't going, but they were being polite because we're Southern.
There you go. That's one way to look at it.
Yep. All right, so we're going to get into this. Bill and I are going to do a new thing this podcast. You'll see. And then I'm going to try to, I bought a truck. I became aware of a thing. I didn't buy a truck. I became aware of a thing that I think is going to.
You said you bought a truck, and I about had an absolute heart attack.
And then, you'll see what the show is about. You'll see what this episode is about. But I guess I'm going to start by this. No. That picture that I sent you, no, that is not mine. Do you really think my wife would let me buy a $50,000 Toyota Corolla?
I mean, stranger things have happened.
You are correct.
I'm just saying, like, if you had bought a Gur Corolla, I would have been like, why did you not seriously consider a Golf R?
Why would I not consider a Golf R? The Golf R is the reason why I probably would never buy a Gur Corolla, because I like nice things. I like squishy fake plastic molding. Yes. I like fake leather. I like fake suede leather. I like nice things. I like premium automobiles. I'm not rich, but I make enough money that I like my plastic to be squishy.
So now let me ask you this question. Do you think who has the more Audi like interior, the Golf R or the Civic Type R?
Of the two?
Because I think the Civic Type R is actually closer to Audi level quality than the Golf Type R or Golf
I've
R,
been...
the type.
I've been in both, and I guess the best way to say it is the Civic feels like a Honda, a nice Honda.
Wait, you've been in a Type R? The new Type R?
Yes.
When did you get in a new Type R? Did you drive?
No, didn't drive it. They didn't let you drive it. No.
Why did they not let you drive it?
Because
you got to work on your sales technique. If I had gotten one, I would have driven.
It was. I'm pretty sure it was already sold, and it was on the showroom floor.
And?
You know, you're better. You're a salesman. Buy a really good one at that. I'm not. I'm a numbers logistics guy. You're the salesman. You talk us in and out of things. I make the numbers work. Kind of how we do it. but yeah, the Civic Type R is, if it feels like a Honda, And the Golf R, it doesn't feel like an Audi, but it feels like Volkswagen is going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the Civic, the Golf R is a couple of them running around the good old base. And one of the kids at work got one, so I got in it. And I mean, it's nice. I mean, it sounds like a tank when you close the door, like most Volkswagens and stuff. But it's just like, all this stuff shouldn't be this shiny. It's just
too much piano gloss black. Yeah. Like, I would seriously, if I were really considering the Golf R as an option, I would look at a 2019 or older.
Yeah, that's why they changed the interior. Coming up this, I think next year, they reworked the interior. I don't think they're going to take out all the piano black, but anything is most things are improved. I can't say anything.
Honestly, the complaints I hear is not even so much about the piano black plastic, because let's be honest, that's the new cool hotness for some reason. Yep. But it's all the haptic switches that, like, you can't tell if you're pushing them or not. That's the problem.
Yeah. That's the stuff they're supposedly changing. And for some reason, they didn't think through that. Hey, let's make the temperature controls illuminate at night. It's dumb.
Right. Well, listen, that happens. I mean, car designers miss stuff, right? I mean, I drive a truck. I drive a 2018 truck. And of all the things to not illuminate, the PRNDM next to the shifter has no illumination.
Well,
obviously on the dash, it shows you what you've selected, but the actual letters in the center console are not illuminated. That seems like an oversight.
I mean, I mean, they only been doing that since we were kids. I mean, I would imagine back in the day, did they do that in like 70s cars?
Feel like they did.
I feel like they did too. But see how you were talking about trucks. So,
yes, let's get into this truck thing. Bring it.
This first matter of business. It starts off with a couple questions. An observation. So, I was doing the thing that we normally do, us car people. I was watching YouTube videos while I'm supposed to be doing chores or something else productive, and a video popped up.
He meant work.
I don't know what you're talking about. And then it made me do a little bit of daggone digging. So I'm going to start this off by asking you a question or two. Did you know that you can get a Ford F-150 hybrid with a front bench seat?
Yes.
You knew that?
Yes.
Now, you actually cannot order right now because it won't let you do it. But it's a selectable thing. It's a selectable thing. But that wasn't the video I was looking at that sparked this thing. I was like, I wonder if Bill would drive this truck. And I kept thinking about it. I was like, this kind of is a Bill truck, because Bill is very quirky and likes to have conversations like, oh yeah, I got this. And it's like, and people look at you weird. It's like, well, why'd you do that? One, because it's not what everybody else got. And two, because I'm Bill. So
there you go.
I'm gonna send you an email and I want you to open it.
Okay. I am standing by to stand by.
All right. So I saw this truck, right? And I built you one. And I want you to tell me why you don't like this truck. Because you're going to tell me why you don't like this truck versus telling me why you like it.
So I have to start with the don't likes.
Well, no, that's another part of being Bill.
Okay. Well, as soon as I get it, I will open it up and let you know it has come in. I am opening it now. Let's take a look. I'm trying not to pass judgment prior to seeing it. Still waiting on the picture to load. Okay, first first thing, I haven't seen the picture yet for some reason. It's still loading, but I'm seeing that the total price is $59,170, which seems fair. Like that's a reasonable, I mean, to me, if you could find a truck for that price, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I suspect that you would have a hard time finding that truck for this price.
Actually, I think that truck right there, you would be able to, with no negotiation, pay $54,170 for it right now. With no negotiation.
I don't know why the picture is still thinking. So,
all right, so I'm looking, I watched the video.
I'm looking for the options. So it has the bench front seat.
Yep.
It has cloth seats. There's a strike.
It doesn't.
You did opt for the mud terrain Duratrac tires, which is a plus. It means you, you're speaking my language. Okay, for some reason you've selected a 2.7 liter turbo engine.
Did the whole thing open yet?
No.
All right, cool. So while that opens, I guess we don't want to have a whole lot of dead space. So
is this the diesel?
No, it's not the diesel.
I thought they got rid of their diesel.
They didn't. But so what had happened was I watched a video on the update for the new Chevy trucks, right? And there had been a Alex from Alex and Autos was driving the one, purposely drove the one with the 2.7 liter turbo in it, which is a four cylinder.
Yes.
Right. And I was shocked about the daggone horsepower and torque numbers. I was like, wait a minute, that's a lot.
And it was then, probably running 35 pounds of boost.
And then he also specifically selected the one that had a bench front seat to drive, right?
Okay.
And I was like, this is a truck that Bill would like right here.
Yeah.
All right,
the picture finally loaded. I like the color. I like that it no longer has square wheel wells.
Yep.
I like the styling. Kendra would not like the hood because that was her complaint with the AT4 GMC we test drove, and it's still very high. I would very much like this front seat situation. I could not care less about a 13.4 diagonal infotainment screen.
It's standard.
That's, yeah, whatever. I like spray-in bed liner. A hard pass on the plastic high clearance off-road steps. I'd rather have my power lift steps. I'm accustomed to those now.
I left those out because I thought they were going to be too fancy.
Well, that's what I've got on my truck. And I did always think they were fancy, but now that I've got them, I really like them. Let me tell you something about this multi-flex tailgate. Okay. One, as somebody who owns the Ford old man step-up tailgate.
Yep.
It is a nice feature, but the plastic stuff on it, something's always loose and rattling or popping off or aggravating. My button's been broke for a year, and I just keep a screwdriver in the bed of the truck to pop it back with. And a friend of mine bought, I think his is a Chevrolet. He's got the 6.2 liter, and his is the AT4 also. And he has the multi-flex tailgate. He has to run a special low profile, super drop down
hitch
because you cannot put that tailgate down without it slamming into your hitch ball and denting your tailgate. And now that I know that, I've been looking and I have seen several Chevy trucks driving around with dents in their tailgate from people who didn't realize that, dropped it down and it just touches, and then they step on it and put weight on it and it just mashes into it. If you start looking, you'll start noticing them too.
I'm definitely going to be looking down.
So I think to me, that means that the Chevy is maybe not as practical as they like to think it is. I mean, being able to sit on it is cool. Being able to step up is cool. Like the idea behind it is cool. I don't disagree. But the some of the like real world use case stuff is a little odd. But I'm just not on board for this four cylinder just because it's a newer engine. I don't know what the mechanical reliabilities are. And while I'm sure it gets good fuel economy and the power numbers are impressive for a four cylinder, I'm concerned about longevity of a four cylinder pulling that much weight around on a regular basis.
All right, cool.
That's my initial take on the truck. I mean, it's a definite improvement over the previous generation, and I like it better than the last generation.
Well, funny you say that, right? So, to be honest, if I bought that truck, I would think, me being the weirdo that I am, I would go with the 2.7 liter just for the simple fact that that's not what everybody else is going to go for, and that is one of the only new vehicles that has a rebate on it right now. It got a $6,000 rebate on that truck.
That's interesting.
With that motor.
Now, if I'm being honest.
And I don't know if it's me getting a V8 with less power is worth $6,000.
So I have been in some training this week for work with a lot of the other sales guys. And you know, we have people in a lot of states. And so I was having a conversation with one of our other sales engineers, and he lives in a much more densely populated part of the country than where I live. And so you're in a more densely populated area of the country than I am. But I guess where he is very larger urban environment. And so there, the dealerships there probably keep on a regular basis more inventory than they would at a dealership here where I am. And he was mentioning to me that several dealerships in his area are now offering discounts and selling at $5,000 to $7,000 under MSRP. Like, it's been a drastic
almost or anything.
Anything. So there's been like an overnight swing.
Okay.
Because inventory is beginning to pile up.
That is one thing that I was going to bring up that wasn't on the topic board, but seeing how we're there. Yeah.
Before we get to that, I was just going to say on the Chevy truck thing, I actually think, and this is like, I'm going to really, really throw a shot out there.
Uh-huh.
The 2023 Chevy Colorado is the best looking compact truck on the market.
I would agree. I like the new Colorado, and then actually I like the new GMC as well. This same engine is
only in the ZR2. I think it looks better than a Tacoma. Seeing the ZR2 Colorado now makes me realize that like the Tacoma just looks tired.
Oh yeah, it's old. It looks old. It is old. I like what they did with them. I mean, the ZR2 isn't my style of truck. That's more you. I would absolutely, everybody would imagine that you would lean that way. You know, I like things to be nice. Therefore, I'm going for the fanciest one. So the Denali, the GMC Denali version of that new truck would probably be more the thing that I would look at first and then realize I don't want to pay $70,000 for that truck. You know what I mean? But it's for some reason, I don't know why them trucks cost so much.
It is crazy to think what you pay for a small truck. But yeah. A lot of it is like trickery, right? It's a mental jujitsu that the car manufacturers do because they think if you drive them a lot and you see the big truck, you're going to think more cost in fuel, more cost in insurance, more upkeep. Like you look at the big truck and think everything about that's going to cost me more money. So I should probably buy the smaller truck.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is the insurance on the smaller trucks more, because you're more likely to be in an accident because you're not as visible. You're more likely to have your truck stolen because it's more appealing to hoodlums to steal a smaller vehicle than a big vehicle. If you have an accident, you're more likely to total the vehicle and it be written off. So all those things play into having higher insurance premiums. Your fuel consumption is going to be a couple $100 difference in a year. It's probably not even going to be a single car payment. And then the overall price of the vehicle, maybe not in the post-pandemic supply shortage world we live in, but up until then, the price is within a couple of $1,000 sometimes by the time you option it out. Now, maybe it's different if you buy a base model work truck, right? But if you're loading one up.
You know what? I heard everything you said just now, and I would like to retract my last statement. The Canyon AT4 looks better than the ZR2.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Canyon AT4 looks better than the ZR2. I probably still would go Denali because, you know, I like nicer things. But I want to be cushioned and stuff. But I could absolutely see you in a Canyon AT4. But to go to speak directly to what you were just saying, I believe all those things are true, mostly true. But the other part about that is I think they're also making room for a Ford Maverick, Hyundai Santa Cruz.
100%, 100%. They are. I don't know where they're going to land. I don't know if they're going to aim for the Santa Cruz or if they're going to aim for the Maverick, because we've discussed this. They are two totally different vehicles.
Yep.
But
yeah, and on that note, I mean, you can't have longer. Let me say it, whatever. I think one of the mistakes that Ford made when it came to the Maverick is they didn't realize how much people were gonna go Maverick versus Diagon Ranger, because they're really not that much different in physical size. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Capability, yeah, they're two different animals. But I've been telling you this for years, and you know, we tell each other this for years. Most people don't want it. They don't need the capability. They just want the truck. You know, you know.
Man, that ties directly into the comment that I was going to make about the video I mentioned to you earlier in the week.
Oh, good. Yeah, we can go there. We can go there. All right,
it's interesting that you point that out, because I was going to circle back to these trucks through my argument about that.
Go ahead. Let's hear it.
So earlier in the week, and I got to apologize to you, Lasoni, I did not, I've had a very, very busy week. So I have not done my due diligence and watched the video that you recommended I watch. I just now have had time.
All right, no problem. Well, no problem, because I realized something when I watched the video you told me. It's the same darn video. They are there at the same time.
Yeah, of course. They're all at the same press release, right? So that's part of it, too. Is like,
you know the green car that you see in front of him all the time in that video?
That's the other dude. So the videos we're talking about, I had recommended to Stanley that he watched Matt Farah of the Smoking Tires video of the press release junket, whatever you want to call it, driving event for the Porsche 911 Dakar. And Stanley had recommended that I go watch the same press release junket video, but for another channel. What was the channel? I'm sorry. Yeah, Auto Trader. That's right.
It's Auto Trader.
One that I wasn't subscribed to.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is, we probably watched the same video from two different channels at the same time, because I was going to say the same thing.
We very well probably did. So in that video, and I don't know what the conclusion was of the Auto Trader video, but and listen, what I'm about to say may sound like I'm disagreeing with something or throwing shade at Matt or whatever, and maybe Matt listens, maybe doesn't. We're friends on Facebook.
He listens.
Yeah. So I'm not. I want to put that out there right up front. I watched Matt's video about the 9/11 Dakar, and you know, it was like one of my, if not the most anticipated car of 2023 that I was, you know, looking forward to, that we discussed at the end of the year last year. And I still think it's an awesome car. And at first, when I watched his video, his kind of takeaway for it was like, he drove it. And I'm sure the location and the whole event led to some of his initial reaction, that like, as he's in the middle of driving it, he's like calling his Porsche dealer and is like, how do I get on the list? What kind of deposit do you need? I want this car. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you know, if I drove it, I'd probably have the exact same thought, if I could afford it. So, but then
he gets to the point. Your wife would never let you spend that kind of money.
Oh, 100%. No. so then he gets to the point where he says, but then I realized, because he's owned a Safari 911, right? He realized that unless you're actually going to get out there and thrash it and beat on it in the sand and gravel roads and like do the things it's meant to be, you know, it was engineered to do, then mm-hmm. you shouldn't buy it. And my immediate reaction was 100% right. Matt's the man. I agree totally. Because I definitely would look for opportunities. If I had the kind of do whatever I want money that it takes to be able to just on a whim go, I like that Porsche, I'm going to order another Porsche and get that one, I would have the kind of money and just ain't care mindset to go out and thrash that thing. Because mm-hmm. even at my current income level, if I could somehow swing purchasing one, I would still go out and thrash it and then just have to live with the consequences later when something had to be fixed. Right. So
you would have to move to Arizona, though.
There's plenty of gravel roads in North Carolina that I could really have a good time on. And so I was like, yeah, I agree with that. That is, it's really well said. Good job, Matt. As always, you really nail it exactly how it needs to be said. However, a day or two passed, and this video and this conclusion stewed in the back of my mind. And then the point you just made about those trucks. Mm-hmm. came to the forefront of my mind. Use case.
Yep.
People don't buy vehicles to do with them what they're engineered to do. I see a lady in town where I live who has a TRX, and how do I put this politely? I only ever see her at the gas station, and the truck's never dirty.
Well, right? One of it's, those things makes sense.
that's why I was trying to think of the best way to say it. Sometimes I see her in a fast food line. You know, she doesn't live too far from me, but she actually lives closer to town in a more urban area where there's more houses densely populated. She is not off-roading that truck. To the best of my knowledge, I'm going to guess and I'm going to make an assumption she's never jumped that truck and probably never will.
Yep.
I see a lot of Ford Raptors that have probably never left pavement unless it's a grass driveway or something.
I know one that lives just like that.
I have friends who have Jeep Wranglers, Sean. And their Jeep will never go off-road unless I steal it from them and do it for them. You know, it's so with that in mind, I have to kind of disagree with Matt's point is like, well, and in the video, he actually says he understands that most of the people who have the money to buy them will never use them properly. And that's a shame. And I agree. Yep. But him saying don't buy it unless you plan on using it is, it's a bit of an empty threat, right? Because to this point, most people are never going to use it. And that's sad. But journalists as a whole, and I'm going to call us journalists, even though we're more commentators than journalists. Yep. We're not, it's not like we're out punishing people for not using their vehicles correctly, right? There's no follow-up. So anyway, with all that being said, I guess my point to the video was I agreed, but then I disagreed because there's too many people buying other stuff that's very capable and they never do any of the stuff it's capable with. So it's exactly your point about the truck.
I'm with you. And the piggyback on that a little bit, the same argument could be made for every sports car, almost every sport car ever. I was going to say except the Miata, but nope, that happens there too. No one ever drives some cars to their capability. Hardly anybody ever takes it to a track. People think they do a 0-60, but they don't.
Would you say that even like, because we were just talking about the Civic, right? The Civic Type R and the Golf R and those economy fast, quote unquote, fast performance cars. I mean, those probably don't even get driven. Nope. Anything above like a Civic Si is probably not being driven because of the price point, right? Because you're spending 50 grand to get one or 50 grand plus to get one. So kind of things.
When the car costs $50,000, you take it out of the price range of the people who are going to be adventurous with it. I mean, like us, when we were 20-something years old, we looked at, you know, oh, we liked all them cars, but we couldn't afford them. But we could afford them. But the ones we did, we drove them, you know, the way that we wanted to drive them. But when you make enough money where you can afford a $50,000 car, you have a decent job by now. You have some responsibilities by now. And for most of them people, I would imagine that's their only car. And they can't afford for it to go down. So,
right.
Yeah. If we're some Marines living in the barracks and we can catch a ride with, you know, somebody else because we doing something dumb to our car. Yeah. Because we're young and we're dumb. But us now, it's like, you know what I'm not doing? If this is my only car, putting coilovers on it because it's going to make it ride horrible. Or do you know what I mean?
I'm trying to think about something.
I mean, all them dudes out here driving Ferraris and stuff that never went into triple digits. You know, dudes running around here with loud Mustangs that never took that car for 80 miles an hour. You know?
Right. Well, you know, it makes me appreciate, like, okay, I don't know if you subscribe or watch any of their stuff, but you know the YouTube channel Daily Driven Exotics, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're kind of an exception to that rule, right? They have Lamborghinis and Ferraris and spend a lot of money on their cars, and they put probably more miles than the average owner of those vehicles, similar to those vehicles, right, in the rest of the market. So if they've got a Ferrari, I don't know, 812, you know, it's, they're putting more miles than probably almost any other Ferrari 812 owner on the planet. And they're probably driving faster on public roads than most of those other owners on a consistency basis. So I guess maybe excluding them as the exception, do you think that when you look at a performance vehicle, especially maybe a more budget-oriented performance vehicle like maybe the Civic Type R or even a Toyota Supra, right? Something like that.
Excuse me.
Do you think that the amount of engineering that goes into that car has suffered by that knowledge from the car company? So in other words, do you think if you're an engineering designer, like let's say you're a chassis suspension guy,
mm-hmm.
at Toyota/BMW, and you're working on that car, do you in the back of your mind go, well, this thing doesn't have to be designed to be driven at 180 miles an hour 7 days a week because nobody's going to actually do that? Or do they design it that way anyway?
No, I don't think they will take something off from an engineer standpoint. An engineer wants to build the best thing all the time, the most innovative thing all the time. They're not concerned about the money. In my opinion, they're not concerned about the money. They want to engineer the product to be able to do what it's going to do, you know, perform its intended purpose. And specifically in performance cars, the special performance car, like a regular GT, maybe not so much. Maybe this doesn't apply so much. Maybe this don't apply so much. But the Type R, the GTR, that engineer is maybe, in my opinion, my hope is going into there. It's like, I'm designing this car for the one dude that is going to drive the wheels off this thing. That's my hope. Now, when it gets over there to the daggone financial office, it's like, hey, dog, you know, that titanium daggone rod, we ain't doing that. You know. But when you get into some exotic makes, yeah, they absolutely putting all that stuff into it. But budget stuff, some of that stuff is getting taken out of the engineer's hands, but just because they're trying to make money. And engineers don't think like, and the engineers I know that don't think like that.
Okay. I see your point.
The engineers I know would design a piece out of some crazy exotic metal because they can do it and they know it'll work. At the same time, knowing that it never get through the financial office just so they can downgrade to titanium.
Okay. So I see your point. But I'll counterpoint it with citing an example. And maybe this is just one specific example.
Yep.
But I think if we had the level of knowledge to dive into each individual like performance component, we might go find some other exceptions. But vehicles that are considered high performance vehicles. And we'll just because it's one we've talked about a lot on the show in past episodes, I'll use this as my example, but it is by far not the only one doing this. So let's take the Audi RS6 Avant. That is a very high performance vehicle. It has a lot of horsepower, whatever it has, like 600 some horsepower. It's ridiculous station wagon, right?
Yep.
However,
yep.
If you handed that car to a race car driver and you said, here's a car that's designed to be fast and last, and we want you to be able to drive it fast on a regular basis and get as much performance out of it as possible, but also be able to use it every day. I think one of, if not the very first thing they would change on the car would be to remove 22-inch wheels.
All right. So I think I see where you're going. But that's one of the things I think when an engineer makes a concession
But that's what I'm saying. The concessions, right? Because you know that I'm going to give a car 640 horsepower, but ain't nobody going to drive it 640 horsepower every day. So instead of really appealing to the performance, we'll appeal to what is aesthetically pleasing.
All right, cool. And that's a designer, not an engineer. And that's also the financial office saying this thing got to look good or it ain't going to sell because we can make it as fast
really?
As that goes.
Really? You don't think that car would have sold with 18-inch wheels on it? That car would have sold.
If that car would have came out with 18-inch wheels on it, because you're talking about journalists and stuff, every YouTube
they would have made fun.
Car reviewer journalist would have been like,
you know who wouldn't have?
Why are the wheels so small?
You know who wouldn't have? Randy Popes, because he's a race car driver.
Yeah.
He would have been you know how much better my lap times are out of this? I'm just saying.
And also, you have a bias. But before we go 2 hours long in the podcast, go ahead.
Sorry.
I'll let you finish.
Sorry. No. That's it. That's all I was going to say. I was just going to cite that as an example because I don't disagree with you. I don't think engineers take shortcuts. But I also don't think that the cars that are performance, quote unquote, cars are designed solely with that performance in mind.
No. I agree with you. 100% I agree with you because they still have to sell cars and it has to appeal to a certain demographic. And that's part of the play. I mean, what car was it? Oh, gosh. The Pontiac Aztec was a very useful car. It had all types of innovative things. And I can go down a couple cars come to my mind. The things that made that car what it was were very useful. The made it fit what it was trying to do. The Chrysler Pacifica, not the minivan, but the SUV that came out, the crossover that came out years ago, was ahead of its time. It does everything all these new daggone crossover things do. People didn't like how they looked, so they didn't sell.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they didn't sell. They didn't appeal, especially in the Aztec plate. It had the Pontiac body cladding on it, but I mean, it had coolers that folded out and did all cool things. And people was like, oh, that's really cool, but it's ugly. I ain't buying that.
The Aztec had some really cool stuff on it for its time.
Yeah. I mean,
but it was
we can even take that argument to the point. It's like all these people out here buying three-row crossovers, which you really need in your life, is a minivan. But crossovers.
They are minivans.
Like
the Dodge Durango. They're minivans.
We know that you have rose colored glasses that allow you to see your world, I'm gonna bring up a couple other things that happened this week, and then we're gonna try this new thing, I'll explain this new thing. All right, I asked you about the Mazda CX-9. You had no idea what I was talking about because you don't care.
You never even told me the name till just now, so I didn't even know what to even look up.
Mazda CX-90. It is a new Mazda crossover.
It up now.
Because I wanted the first reaction. It is front engine, rear wheel drive based, all wheel drive with a turbo diagonal inline six in it with the mild hybrid system on it. And I think it looks a whole lot like Mazda does at BMW.
Really?
If you look at the specs, looking at the specs and the size of that vehicle, and just in my opinion, looking at it, it looks like a X5. It looks a lot like a one generation, what an X5 could have been. It was just a different design decision.
All right, I'm looking this thing up now. Mazda. So it'd be under future vehicles. Oh, there's right there on the main page. Mazda first ever CX-90 Few. What's Few? Few.
I don't know what you're looking at, but
P-H-E-V. I don't know what that is. What's P-H-E-V?
You know what P-H-E-V, plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. You know what that is. Come on.
One of those terms.
Yeah, they have a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle.
Not interested in that.
We're not talking about that part. Just look at the burgundy one.
Okay, the burgundy one. Okay. I mean, it's a nice-looking minivan. I don't know if I prefer... I mean, a Chrysler Town & Country still looks pretty good compared to that, but...
They don't build Chrysler Town & Countries, and you're being funny.
Do they not?
They don't make Chrysler Town & Country. The Pacifica replaced that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I haven't ever been in the minivan market, so I forget who does what, but...
I know. We forgive you for that.
It does have a solid second row seat. I like seeing that.
It is 7 or 8 passengered.
I mean, an 8 passenger minivan is nice for sure. You want that. Like I do. I would want more seats than less seats. I'm just looking at some of the pictures here. Standard all wheel drive. That's nice, but I could have guessed because it's a CX, right? So I know my Mazda lingo a little bit. So I'm just giving you my initial reaction. Like, I feel like a 3.3 liter turbo is going to be working hard with 8 people in there and some luggage. I would like to see a larger engine option that doesn't involve adding 4,000 pounds of batteries. But, hey, I mean, look, you got to get those kids to soccer practice somehow. Oh, look, right there in the gallery, there's a picture of the burgundy one with, I think, the husband's driving, the kids are in the back, the wife's in the passenger seat, and she is making him take his cafe racer to sell it so they can buy some rabbit food. That's nice. Yep. Isn't that nice, watching him give away his manhood? Like, twice in one picture. He's giving away his manhood by driving a minivan. And then by also having to give up his motorcycle.
You're being mean.
That's good marketing, really, if you think about it.
You're being mean.
There's my initial reaction. That's my initial reaction.
And 340 horsepower, 69 pound-feet of torque is not a bad daggone output. You know,
It's not bad, but a V8 would be real good.
A V8 would be real good, and I'm going to help you make a case for a V8 in a few minutes.
A twin turbo V8 would be better.
Yeah. All right, so what else happened new this week? Toyota came out with a new Grand Highlander. Volkswagen updated the Atlas, and back to... It just came out like a couple hours ago. So while you're looking at that, I'm explaining what we're gonna do. So for the first time ever, me and Bill are gonna get off this thing. Well, we're gonna keep recording. You're not gonna hear this part.
Yeah.
But we're gonna watch a video together, and then we're gonna have an argument.
What? Explain to me what we're doing. I'm looking at the new Atlas Cross Sport. Not bad.
I'm going to send you a video. I'm going to play a video. We're going to watch the video together. And then we're going to argue about this point and the point that you've been working up a daggone rebuttal to all week.
So for our listeners, we're going to take a break and then come back. Basically,
they're going to hear some evening music. And we're back. All right, so
we're back.
So me and Bill watched this video, and he's gonna do his angry man thing.
And... Wait a minute. Why don't you tell the listeners what the video is, so if they want to watch it, they can go look for it.
I'll put a link in the thing. All right. So the video was a Alex Zanotto video. Actually, it's on his EV buyer's guide video. He was talking about the case for not buying an EV. That is the name of the video, something like that. I'll fix it. But anyway, he's making a case for not buying a vehicle that requires a plug. But Bill has thoughts, and I would like to hear those thoughts. And this is the first time that we've ever attempted this. So I gave Bill a time limit because we'll be here all night otherwise. Go.
So one of the very first things he says in the video is he begins making comparisons of fuel consumption and fuel costs aggregate over a year period. And one of the things he mentions in there is that for his commute, these were the numbers he found, and for his driving style.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has his commute, and I'm going to go out on a big limb and say, based on the rest of his video, that not everybody has his driving style. So with that in mind, I would definitely say, like, well, I said this before you were like, hey, we need a spot to jump back in here. So he makes some very dangerous assumptions, very dangerous assumptions. And so it is hard for me to easily pick apart things that he said when there were so many assumptions that he makes and then built his entire argument on assuming those things to be factual. And we live in a dangerous world today where I don't want to hurt this guy's feelings, but there are scientific facts and then there are feelings. And I understand that he has apparently pretty strong feelings about the virtues of getting the whole world to buy a hybrid vehicle versus a plug-in electric vehicle versus a plug-in hybrid, whatever it was, that other thing you said earlier. Like,
PHEV. I get it.
Yeah, I get it. He has feelings about that. Doesn't make them true. It just means he has feelings about it. And I'm okay with him having feelings about it. But to make huge assumptions and then build an entire video argument based on those feelings, well, that's just not factual. So it's hard for me to just say, well, I disagree with that point and that point and that point, when the very first foundational point is an infactual assumption. And so I don't know. I struggled with the video, not because I disagree. Like, to go back to our Corvette conversation from the last episode, adding batteries for performance, there's a use case.
Mm-hmm.
But to lie to the world and say that mining minerals to add batteries to your car to save the planet is borderline criminal. I'm not a drill for oil all over the planet, burn the earth, evil conservative that people would have you assume that my previous statement would mean. I actually really care for the earth, and I think that there's a lot of things we could do to preserve the earth and do better with what we've been given. Batteries in cars are not one of those things. It is a deferred waste management program. That's not a solution. That's a fix to a visual problem. It's like saying, well, it appears our house It looks like the trusses that support our roof have been getting water on them for years, and they're a little bit rotted. So we're just going to spend a bunch of money on paint. And paint over those rotted sections so they look pretty. Well, that doesn't fix the rot. Like, you're just delaying it to be somebody else's problem down the road. And maybe that makes you feel better. Maybe you sleep better until the roof falls on you, but it's not fixing the problem. If you say, again, if you say, I'm going to add hybrid technology to my car to give it a half a second a lap, or, you know, 13 seconds a lap at the Nürburgring, Nordschleife, you know, improvement of lap time, cool, go for that. I'm all on board for that. That's cool. I like car performance. Good strategy. Because not a lot of people are going to buy them, except for people willing to drive like that, or they want the performance car. But to say your 16-year-old can save the planet by buying a 5,000-pound Prius and drive it around with a bunch of batteries in it that her grandchildren will have to deal with because there's no recycling plan in place for the unusable batteries, that's not okay. Because at 16, she's not thinking about her grandkids or her great-grandkids. So tricking her into thinking that she's saving the planet so that you'll be dead and gone when she figures out you were lying, that's not a solution. And so at the very outset, his assumption that batteries are better for the planet makes everything else he said invalid. So it's hard for me to just pick it apart. I don't know. That's my initial take is when your whole ground you're standing on is a pile of lies, it doesn't benefit me to pick out one part of it and go, yeah, this ain't cool.
All right, I was letting you get through it. Letting you get through that. All right. I think you misunderstood the whole point of that video.
No. And I understood the point of the video hybrid is better than a full electric.
I think you misunderstood.
That was his point, right?
I think you misunderstood the point. That was one of them, but I think you misunderstood the point of the video. His point of the video was something that we talked about, and which is one of the reasons why I wanted you to watch this video. And I knew if I was sent it to you, you weren't going to watch it because you're just going to be busy or you're just going to pull a bill. But anyway, so I trapped you. His point was, like we have stated in previous episodes, that I don't believe the jump is straight to, and we don't, neither one of us believe that every vehicle sold tomorrow should be an EV. I don't think nothing's really ready for that. I don't think nothing's in place for it. I don't think the consumer is ready for it. And I don't think it's good for the industry. For like just the kind of to dumb it down for lack of better terms, but this was that me or you?
Me, sorry.
Oh, you good? But I do agree with him that making steps towards that is better than staying where we are, and that's why. Even though I don't currently own a hybrid vehicle because I could not find one, I agree with that step. I agree with Toyota's logic in this whole thing instead of the Cadillac's logic. I was trying to think of somebody else who made a thing that they're going to do with it. Hey, instead of us trying to paying all this money from lithium to produce all these lithium ion batteries, and which is going to cost the consumer, which we don't have everything in place to deal with right now. I'm going to make this Prius, which gets 59 miles a gallon, which cuts down on consumption. Not saying that we're going to still burn gas, but we're going to cut down on consumption because it gets 59 miles a gallon, I think, in 52 miles a gallon in the Prius versus it getting 30. And I'm cool with that. And then until the technology for the next step appears or matures, because I don't think EVs is going to be the big fix either. Making a step towards something is better than doing nothing. I.e., I used to smoke. Quitting cold turkey for me was not a thing. So I weaned myself off of it, and I still have steps to make. Am I 100% 100%? I don't smoke cigarettes no more. Am I 100% done putting stuff in my body that I don't need? No, but I'm moving towards that. I used to drink. I didn't just quit cold turkey. I weaned myself off of it. And, you know, I rarely drink except for Dago, like on some kind of special occasion. So, like, when I hit my 25th anniversary this year, I'm going to have a drink. It's probably going to knock me on my butt, but I'm going to have a drink. But when I watched that video, the point that I took from it was cutting down on consumption is a achievable goal. And it's way more achievable than making everything EV tomorrow. Okay. So stop trying to do this, because if everybody cuts down on consumption, we are achieving some form of this goal, which is cutting down consumption, putting greenhouse gases in the air and all this other stuff.
Okay.
But
okay, so let me first agree with your point.
Real quick, also, you said something about assumptions. The assumption that you said he made, he ain't going to be able to dag on tell everybody, hit what everybody drives. He was assuming that from his driving, he drives 16,650 miles a year. And in that case, driving those vehicles the way that they would work for him, those were the amounts of gallons of gas that he would consume. But go ahead, you're about to say something.
Yeah. I said, okay. Look, I will agree that tackling consumption is a worthwhile pursuit. However, adding batteries to vehicles is not the only way to tackle consumption. And assuming it's the best way to tackle consumption is part of his logic that's flawed in the assumptions he made. Because there are, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, that computers are a little better now than they were in the invention mm-hmm. of the car, or the catalytic converter, okay, right. Which was to help cut down on emissions and fuel consumption. So let's say under that assumption that computers are better, that fuel injection can be done better, that engine performance can be leaner and cleaner, and just a standalone gasoline engine can perform better than it mm-hmm. could 10, 15, 20, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Without doing more harm to the planet, mining more raw materials that are limited. There's only so much nickel, cobalt,
zinc, lithium,
all these. There's only so much of that in the planet. Just like mm-hmm. people say there's only so much fossil fuel in the planet. So mining those things and adding them to a car and making that car considerably heavier than it needs to be then also has some unintended side effects. Like in an effort to make that car lighter, we try to use more plastics in the car instead of metals. Those plastics also have to be chemically manufactured using other raw materials like fossil fuel, believe it or not, or carbon fiber. And I don't know if you know this, but there's only so much carbon fiber in the planet. And what else does it have a side effect on? Oh, yeah, heavier cars use tires more. So tires have fossil fuels in them. And so you're using more fossil fuels to make tires. What else uses a lot of fossil fuels? Oh, that's right, paving highways. So if you make all the cars a lot heavier, they wear out the road a lot faster. Do you know how much fossil fuel is used in paving a road? One mile of asphalt consumes 10,718 gallons of diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 11,000 gallons. Do you know the weight of that Kia hybrid that he had in his video was?
Yeah.
Yeah, the plug-in hybrid weighs 4,497 pounds.
No, I don't.
That's the gross weight.
I'm looking at it right now.
I'm also looking at it right now.
I'll scroll down. I was looking at curb weight.
Congratulations. Did you know what the curb weight is for an SUV with a V8? Like the Chevy Tahoe?
About 5,000.
Yes. So 1,000 pounds heavier for, I would consider, a larger vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only 1,000 pounds difference between them. So, and I mean, look at a Rivian, right? I mean, I like Rivians, but that SUV is like almost like 8,000 pounds or something ridiculous. It's so heavy, right? It's one of the heaviest vehicles on the planet at the moment. And I'm sure the people at GMC are like, we can do better with the Hummer, make it 12,000 pounds. But my point is, back to his assumptions in the video, there are some very dangerous assumptions being made and glossed over in the vein of marketing, because what's the best way to sell new vehicles? Tell people there's an all new technology they have to have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I'm listening.
If you give people a piece of that all new technology, listen, we know you guys can't all go out and buy a Tesla. You should, but we know you can't, because for whatever reason, the infrastructure can't support it, and maybe you can't afford it, and maybe you're a little technology adverse. So we want to give you a little piece of that's just marketing. That's marketing speak. That's saying, here's something new and shiny. Come buy it because it's so great. It's so wonderful. It's going to save the planet. Guess what else it's going to do? It's going to have 65,000 more components on it that are more likely to break in the first 5 years of ownership, because we're building them so fast and designing new ones so fast, so we can all jump on the bandwagon. We're not putting the engineering time that went into, you know, the windshield wiper motors on a 1954 Ford Thunderbird. I mean, my point is, don't be just absorbing everything that's said as like, oh, this is exactly what they say it is, being done for exactly the reason they say it is, because that's not always the case. And when you get past like hearing somebody say something in a video that's their point being made makes sense if you are occupying the same assumptions they are. The moment you don't share those assumptions, it all sounds kind of crazy, right? And that's my point, is that while I understand the point he's making and there is logic in his point, it's definitely not the smart way to go about solving the problem of consumption. There's far better ways of solving the problem of consumption. You want to know an even better way of solving the problem of consumption? Put everybody on a diesel electric train and let them commute to work.
Correct.
That's a way better fix. Don't even buy
trains
a car.
Trains are hybrids. If people didn't know
diesel
that.
Electric is a hybrid. Using a diesel motor to power an electric motor to drive the wheels. Yeah, it's technically a hybrid. Like, so I'm just saying, there are smarter options, so just don't live under the assumption that that's the only option.
Yeah.
And he really presented that as like, our only option is to all go electric, but the best way to go electric is to ease into it and everybody buy a smaller horsepower gas car with a bigger battery on it. Like, that's not a safe assumption. And then to go so far as to say he would suggest legislating smaller and smaller engines, that's even more dangerous, because we live in a free country where people are free to choose to do things of their own accord.
All right, so again, I think you misunderstood the video. And I think I know why you misunderstood the video, which is why I wanted to talk to you about it.
Well, so because, tell me what I misunderstood about it.
Because he's not making the case, like you, the last thing you just said. He didn't say, I would legislate smaller vehicles. I would legislate higher gas, higher fuel consumption. What's the word? Miles per gallon. CAFE. Because CAFE, it's just CAFE. He would stick to that philosophy versus legislating EVs.
Legislating anything is a terrible idea.
Legislating fuel economy is why engines have gotten better over the last 10, 15, 20 years. Legislating fuel economy has, in my opinion, has been the number one driver of new engine technology.
Really?
Because we lived through the 80s and the 70s and stuff, and take for example GM. They were building the same small block 350 for how many years?
Like 700.
Yeah, it works. And there's no incentive to that go make it better, because it works and it's cheap and it's a more profitable, it makes money. They just keep the same process, keep the same the same thing going over and over and over again. And repeating that process does save you money. It does make that product more profitable. But when they had to change, that's when all these new small block VA started coming out. When they had to, on the truck side of things, it wasn't even that they had that high. I don't think that the CAFE affected them that much, but they had to change because they were putting that same V8 in cars, and it made those engines better. So
I don't think legislation did it.
They didn't do it over the 50 years that preceded it.
Sure they did. Sure they did. Henry Ford built a four-cylinder, and Chevrolet built a four-cylinder, but then guess what Chevy came out with? A straight six.
Yeah.
Was that legislation?
No, I'm talking about, that was not, that was innovation, that was innovation, and there wasn't legislation that was driving it. But I wasn't alive back then, and you wasn't either.
It doesn't matter if I was alive or not. I'm not going to be alive when Anna's children have to figure out what to do with all these stinking batteries. And she's not going to be able to sit on her podcast or her thought cast or whatever it is they got 100 years from now in the future and just think, well, it don't matter. I wasn't alive back then. Like, it's going to matter. Like, innovation happens outside of government influence. I promise.
Innovation does happen outside of government influence. However, given the opportunity, what I have observed in the automotive industry, they will repeat the same process with lipstick on it and sell it to us again because it's cheaper and it increases their profit margin.
So you don't think that's what this is? Wait a minute. You don't think, because that's a whole nother conversation. You don't think that EVs, plug-in EVs, partial plug-in EV, you don't think that that's just throwing lipstick on something and presenting it to you in a new, prettier way and hoping you'll spend more money on it? Because I promise if it wasn't that, they wouldn't be doing it. Car makers are always looking for a way to sell you something more expensive, less reliable, and shinier sooner. I promise they are. if this was long-term sustainable and saved the planet, and if you bought one and you never had to hurt the planet again, they wouldn't make it.
I don't mean to be rude, but I got a situation I got to deal with.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
I guess the crux of all of this is, as good as friends as we are, and as big as fans as we are, the biggest Cardinals as we are, we will always have differences of opinions.
Yes, and absolutely, and that's
And the fact that we can sit here and debate them, because that was the other part about this, is the fact, because I knew we was going to disagree on this. I wanted the dagger. I wanted to prove a point to some of the listeners that's listening to this. You can disagree with your friends. It's okay.
Absolutely. That's exactly and, right. Although, and the other I, will part of, say, I will say...
The other part about this is one day I'm going to get built by a hybrid.
No, absolutely not. I was going to say, Stanley's original text message, if I'm not mistaken, did say... Stanley to get Bill to accept hybrids. Yeah, it still didn't happen, buddy. Except for me to say, I accept that they exist. I accept that there is a use case, but I do not accept the use case that is being told that we should accept. That's my be all end all on my opinion of it. Maybe one day I'll change my mind, but it ain't today.
I'm gonna be there that day.
Are you? You're gonna be there that day.
I'm gonna be there that day when you change your mind. I have changed your mind before. It took a long time, but I did it before.
I know we got to jump off. I was just gonna say I had a conversation this past in between weeks between episodes. I had a conversation with a friend of mine that owns a dealership, and we discussed current car inventories on dealership lots. It's not our friend that was on the podcast. So if you're thinking, you know who I'm talking about, it's not. It's a different friend that owns another dealership a competing brand dealership. And we also discussed Bring a Trailer, because this person has bought, I think, 14 vehicles off of Bring a Trailer now.
What? Whoa, time out.
And so we were having a conversation about where the market's going, and there are a lot of cars going through Bring a Trailer right now that are not meeting the reserves, not meeting the minimum bids. That's a little concerning for the like collector car market. But if you've got if you've got money to spend, maybe it's the time to buy. I don't know. Maybe hang in there a little bit longer and it'll be the time to buy in the not too distant future. But then also the flip side of that is, you know, we talked last week about how ugly that electric Subaru is.
It is.
I saw a 6,000 mile 2019 Subaru WRX STI S209 just sold on Bring a Trailer for $82,500.
Stop. All right, wait a minute. I was looking at my phone because of the situation, which I'm gonna make that call when we get off here. What did you just say?
I just said a 6,000-mile 2019 Subaru WRX sold on Bring a Trailer for $82,500 because people understand that was the last good WRX STI, because the new WRX is ugly and nobody wants a CVT.
It ain't that ugly. We're gonna watch.
It's ugly enough people are willing to pay $83,000 to not have to buy one. That should tell you everything you need to know.
That is because somebody got way too much money than they need. in their life. They got money to burn. And we're gonna watch the Engineering Explained video when he is talking about the CVT, just to see you turn red again. Yes, you are correct that cars are starting to pile up on dealership lots right now. There is another dude that he's on YouTube too. I just found his video popped up one day. He's a used car salesman, and he's going around. He's just looking. He made some comparisons. I sent you a couple of his videos. But anyway, one of the points that he was making is something that I think we talked about before offline, maybe on the podcast. This is the point that we knew were coming, that we knew was coming. And it was going to be, it's that point of which that people were going to say, I can't do this. And then those cars are going to pile up on that lot. And then they're going to lose money.
Yeah, they're going to make a hard decision.
And this all could have been prevented with a little bit less greed. Just a little bit. Just a little bit less greed. And
by a
little bit,
you're being very polite, because by a little bit, you mean a lot bit less greed. So my counterpoint that I'd never got a chance to make about me trying to meet you halfway on hybrids is I would purchase, and I can screen share that page if you don't have to jump off instantly. I would purchase that hybrid.
Oh, a hybrid is good if it's in a sports car. I think I just fixed it.
I just said that. You weren't listening because you were so ready to defend homeboy and his KDM fetish over hybrids. But listen, this is the my point of, like, the E Corvette is the smart Corvette. Like, when it comes to performance, I understand adding a mild hybrid system. Now, when you tread on the legacy of a brand like NSX, I'm going to argue it and say it's terrible, because you're destroying the namesake of a pure thing and tainting it.
It's not destruction.
And tainting it with a battery. No, you're tainting it with a battery. But when you take a cool station wagon that isn't trying to be an SUV, like the Panamera Turbo SE Hybrid Sport Turismo, and you incorporate hybrid technology to aid in performance, and you give me the ability to deselect everything on there that makes it look like and virtue signal that it's somehow a hybrid saving the planet, I support it and I'm on board with it. And I would be willing to spend up to and including exactly one third of the price of this vehicle.
I know you were going to say that, though, but you could, the price of equipment, yeah, you can spend those 50 and the delivery, you spend that $15,000.
I would easily pay, now seriously, I would easily pay $75,000 for this car. I would not feel bad paying $75,000 for this car. This car is worth $75,000 to me.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there are people out there rich enough and stupid enough to pay $216,000 for this car speaks to, again, that terrible assumption that people are making, and also just how, like, foolish people are to want, like, the newest next thing. So anyway, I was going to just say I can meet you halfway in supporting a hybrid, but only when the use case is aiding in performance. And you're not trying to pretend like you're saving the planet, because you're not. In fact, you're killing the planet faster.
Getting better miles per gallon is performance too.
Yes, but you're not saving the planet. Again, if you market it as we're giving you higher performance levels, fine. But don't market it that you're helping the earth and you're consuming less resources. You're actually consuming a lot more. So that's my takeaway, is okay with performance, not okay with consumption, doesn't exist.
Again, we're going to agree to disagree. Well, I think you're disagreeing with me more than you, because whatever. Anyway, I think you agree with me more than you think you agree with me. And that's where I'm going to leave that at.
I'm not sure that's, I don't know about that. Maybe we could comment, send us a message and tell me who you agree with. Tell Stanley and I who you agree with. Send us a message. And if we're both wrong, tell us why we're both wrong, and tell us the third point that we haven't thought about. So, and we can,
oh, we thought about we it. We just ain't said that on yet. The air. But yeah, I got some editing to do.
Yeah, you do. And you got some situations to deal with. So go handle your business. I love you, brother.
Night, Bill. Love you, too.